call this little message Saving the Appearances, seeing the truth in the treasures of life, really learning what Christ has for us here. We have been asking ourselves as we listen to Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount, what does it mean to follow Jesus? Now, as Christians, our first immediate thought to think about that kind of a question, what does it mean to follow Jesus, would seem like we need a deep theological answer for that question. And indeed, there is a deep theological answer involved in that question. And yet, it's also a question that you can get started on answering by simply looking around the room in which you sit right now. Now, if you're to look around, I know you're all meeting at home here, so if you look around the room in which you're sitting, you will see many things. Some of these things will have different relationships to you. Some of them might be special to you because of the memories associated with them. You might see that and say, my grandmother gave that to me. Some of the things in the room might be special to you because of some benefit they give you. You are sitting on some kind of a chair probably right now. Well, that has benefit to you. So you you have that relationship with that thing. Or some things are special to you because of what you can do with it. Some things, I have fun with this, and so I like it. Or this medication really helps me out. Some of the things you see in your room, depending on where you're sitting, might be special because of their monetary value. I mean, they're the kind of thing that you would tell your children, be really careful with that because it costs a lot of money. Some of the things in your room you might look at as having almost no value to you. That's the kind of thing you look over in the corner and you say, oh, I forgot to throw that away last night. All this is to point out, really, that you're going to spend your whole life in relationships with things. And what we're going to see today is that following Jesus puts us into a right relationship with the things of this present life, a relationship to things which is defined by our relationship to God. And that's what our text today teaches us. Let me just read it here for us. Pardon me. And what I want to do as I read it out loud is to read it in its context a little bit so we keep this in mind. So I'm going to begin reading at verse 19 and read down through verse 24. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy or single, your whole body will be full of light. And if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. You see, our text is right in the middle of this section here, verses 22 and 23, the eye being the lamp of the body and the lesson that Jesus draws from that. Now let's think about this a little bit here today. Jesus is a great teacher. Sometimes we think that a great teacher always makes things simple and clear, and we assume that clear means easy to understand. You know, you don't have to think too hard because the teacher does all the thinking for you already. But Jesus does not do your thinking for you. He is a great teacher, but it's because he calls you to wisdom, not because he always makes things easy. Sometimes he even seems enigmatic, a little bit confusing. But the disciple knows that it's worth it to receive his teaching and to wrestle to know him, to know what he's saying, because he has the words of life. What is he saying here? And why does he say it right here? Why does he bring up the eye is the lamp of the body? Here we do have one of those enigmatic teachings of Jesus, which is full of wisdom, pardon me, waiting to be discovered. So what we're going to do right now is try to mine into this and find out what gold is there for us. He starts out by saying that the eye is the lamp of the body. A lamp is something that gives light so that you can see what you're doing or see where you're going. That's the whole point of a lamp. Your eye, Jesus talks about here, which he compares to a lamp, is your organ of sight. Through your eyes, you look out on the world to tell you where you're going and what you're doing. I mean, right now, through your eyes, you are looking at a computer screen, at least most of us here, and in order to get a sense of what's going on right here. The eye guides the body. The eye is the lamp of the body. It shows us where we're going and what we're doing. But I think it's important to pay attention here to the picture Jesus gives us. The human eye is not merely a passive receptacle of light, as if it was just a machine like a camera lens to take in light. Like a lamp, it shines out or it looks out on the world. It's this looking out is the action of a person. When you look out on the world, it expresses your heart. It interacts with your mind in what it sees. And this is why we constantly use seeing to describe understanding or judgments that we make. When somebody explains something to you that you had not understood before, and they make it clear to you so now you understand, what do you say? You say, "Oh, now I see." What happened? It wasn't that the light striking your eyeballs changed at all, that there was some change in the input of the data, if we want to call it that. But what changed was the understanding. The relationship you now bear to what you're seeing is different. You've been able to make sense of a pattern. You've been able to put things together in a way that your mind can grasp. That's seeing. And really, this is the way that the Bible uses this from the very beginning of Scripture. If we look all the way back to Genesis chapter 5, chapter 3 and verse 5, where we have the story of the temptation of Adam and Eve, we find that as the serpent comes to Eve, he tells her that she should take of this fruit, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, because he says, "You will not surely die, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and a treat that was to be desired to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate, and also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate. And then the eyes of them both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. Pardon me. From the very beginning of human existence, we've known that our eyes are not merely just passive receptacles of light. They are that through which we know and understand. We learn to see what is there. So for example, if you've never studied architecture or building, how to build a house, you can drive through a neighborhood and see houses. It's just houses. But if you're a skilled architect, or if you are a builder who knows your craft well, you drive through a neighborhood and you see all kinds of things that the untrained eye does not see. You're almost, in a sense, entering into a conversation with these buildings. There is meaning here because you've learned to see. It's also true of us as humans that we see what we give attention to. That is what you shine your lamp on, so to speak. There's an intentionality involved in seeing. We all know that there are a lot of things that we see in one sense every single day that we don't see. We don't ever even notice. We don't pay any attention to them. But the things we give our attention to are the things we truly see. Now, I've taken time to meditate on this metaphor here that Jesus gives us a little bit, because grasping the active nature of seeing helps us with the teaching that Jesus draws from this reality that the lamp of the body is the eye. The eye. So he begins to talk about two different kinds of eyes here. First of all, Jesus deals with a single eye. So if your eye is single, your whole body will be bright, to give a kind of a literal translation. You see in the ESV there, it's if your eye is healthy. What does this mean? Well, how does Jesus describe this eye here? He calls it single, which is a word that means as single as opposed to twofold or double. He's not talking about being a cyclops, only having one eye. He's talking about the way you see. He's talking about something that is simple or sincere or straightforward, without guile, pure, honest. That's the idea of this singleness of eye that he's communicating here. Let me just give you a text for comparison purposes here. In 2 Corinthians, we were reading from Chronicles earlier, in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, the Apostle Paul expresses his concern that, let me get to the right text here. He says, "But I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts, your minds will be led astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ." That's the same term we're using in our text here, this sincere devotion to Christ. Now, what's even more interesting about this term, though, that we've kind of gotten the basic idea, is that it takes on connotations of generosity, of giving sincerely in some passages. So if you're in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and you turn back just a few pages to 2 Corinthians chapter 8, you'll find it used here. As the Apostle Paul begins to tell the Corinthians about the grace of God that was given among the churches of Macedonia, he says this in verse 2, "For in a severe test of affliction, their abundance of joy and their extreme poverty," they're down to the depths kind of poverty, "have overflowed in a wealth of," and it's translated here, "generosity," a wealth of singleness, sincerity, simplicity on their part. For according to their power, he says, as I can testify, and beyond their power, that was something self-chosen, they gave, verse 5, themselves to the Lord, and then by the will of God to us, this giving that was taking place. What was going on here with the Macedonian churches, the Macedonian Christians? They had a singleness of devotion to God, so that a severe test of affliction, of being even brought into a state of extreme poverty, did not hinder their ability to give to others. It's not so much talking about the amount they gave, as if they were lavish in their giving, but simply the simplicity of their giving. There was a richness, a wealth of generosity or sincerity, same term here, on their part. You see, he's getting at a whole relationship to things, to material possessions here, that is all controlled by a certain way of looking at life, a singleness of heart, a purity of devotion, an honesty of character. So Jesus, to go back to our passage, is talking about an orientation of your whole person to what you see, what you perceive in this world around you. If you give yourself to what you see in the light of seeking first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, then you're going to truly understand what is good and right and true. He says, if your eye is single in this way, if you're giving yourself to what is there to perceive in this right way, you're truly going to understand. You will be full of light. You'll understand what's good and right and true. It's going to guide you in relationship to all the things you see. That's a single eye. But now Jesus contrasts that with an evil eye. This is the other hand here. If your eye is bad or evil, your whole body will be dark. So let's ask ourselves, what does it mean to have an evil eye? There are some passages actually in Scripture which help us greatly in grasping the connotation of this expression, an evil eye. To go through them quickly, Deuteronomy 15:9 warns against a situation in which, again, I'm giving a very literal translation here, evil is your eye toward your poor brother. Here's a man in Israel. He knows it's coming close to the sabbatical year. And he knows that in this time he's going to have to give back, or I should say he's going to have to forgive any loan that he's given to a fellow Israelite. And so because of that, he's afraid of losing money, and so he won't give anything. You do not give your poor brother anything. That's described as having an evil eye toward your poor brother. Proverbs 23:6 also uses this kind of expression, and it warns against eating the bread of a man with an evil eye. Don't partake of his bread if he's a man with an evil eye. And then in Proverbs 28:22, it also speaks about a man with an evil eye in this term. A man with an evil eye hastens after wealth. Pardon me. This is his character. This is how he looks at things. He goes after wealth. That's what he wants. To give a little bit of a contrast here, Proverbs 22, verse 9 says, and I'll give a very literalistic kind of translation, a good eye, he will be blessed. Or, he who has a good eye will be blessed because he gives his bread to the poor. We're starting to see a consistent way of using this whole concept of an evil eye versus a good eye. A good eye can be described as bountiful or friendly. It looks out for the good of others. As one man has put it, good denotes the desirable quality of being useful and advancing life. An eye reveals a person's character and disposition. So an evil eye is one that can be described as grudging, avaricious, stingy, envious, greedy, resentful. So the generous man, in contrast to the selfish man, does not hasten to advance his own life but that of his neighbor. I think that's a good way to describe what we see in the book of Proverbs there. Now, moving to the New Testament, we see a text which fits perfectly with what we've just seen in Proverbs. Matthew chapter 20, verse 15. It's part of the parable of the laborers in the vineyard. And when the laborers, who were hired first to go work in the vineyard and worked the whole day, came to the time of being paid, they began to complain that the laborers who were hired last toward the end of the day and hadn't worked as long as they had, received the same wages that they did. They didn't think this was right. And the owner of the vineyard responds to them in this parable. Is it not proper to me to do what I will with that which is mine? And then he asks them a question. Or is your eye evil because I am good? You see, he was exposing something about their character, about the way they saw life, even about the way they understood justice. The laborers' character and their disposition was something that was self-centered. It was grudging. It was avaricious. It was stingy, envious, resentful, selfish, all those things we just talked about from Proverbs. Whereas the owner, in this case, was giving. And he advanced life. That was his goal in what he's doing with his money. This is the difference between a good eye and an evil eye. Now back in our text, Jesus applies this here. He says, if then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? From what we've learned now, I think we can put this together. If your very act of understanding and judgment, your eye, by which you guide your life, is dark, then you are in a very dark condition. You see, folks, this helps us see why it's so easy for humans to think they know what they are doing when they are walking in darkness. They think they know what they are doing because they are using their faculties of judgment. They're thinking. They're educated people. They are using the latest and greatest in scientific advancement. They're using the best in data that we have available. There are all these things they're doing. And so it feels to them like they really are being wise. But Jesus points out here that if your very means of judgment is corrupted, then you're never going to get a true judgment. The very thing you're using to come to a true judgment has been twisted, has been corrupted. If the very thing you look out on the world to see with is darkness, you're never going to receive the light that is really there. And it won't be because the light isn't there. It's because you can't see. And that brings us down to seeing the truth in the treasures of this life. Having put this together now, we can see that Jesus has not changed topics. He was talking in verses 19 through 21 about your treasure and laying up treasure in heaven as opposed to earth. Then in verse 24, he goes back to talking about not serving mammon, but serving God. And the two masters there, you can't serve both at the same time. Those very clearly have to do with our earthly treasures, the things with which we interact and have a relationship all around us every single day. Verses 22 and 23 might initially strike us as, what does this have to do with? Did Jesus just jump tracks here? What's he talking about? I hope you can see now that he hasn't changed topics at all. What he's actually done is take the same topic we're talking about here, but he's driven it very deeply into the recesses of our soul, the way we perceive the things of our lives, the way we understand the things of our lives. That's what he's getting us to deal with. He's dealing with this in a way that's going to confound the proud. It's going to confound the proud because they think they know. They think they are capable. They think they're educated. They think they have the light. But this is also going to be a way in which he instructs the humble, those who are willing to listen carefully to what he has to say and to learn from it, not just to brush it off because it seems enigmatic, but to say, no, this is something I need to transform my whole perspective on this world. This is the truth Jesus is teaching us about the real righteousness that he brings. And so here's a key point that I think Jesus is driving us to see. Life, as we experience it in this world, is a gift to be given. The whole world and everything you see in the world is a gift from God. That is its true meaning. And it's meant to be gratefully received and then returned in love, given to God, given to my neighbor. You know, if you're selfish, if you approach the whole world from the perspective of basically what's in it for me, what does this do for me? And you begin to interpret all the things in your life in relationship to me and how it benefits me, and how it does what I want to accomplish, and how I can control it to achieve my objectives. If you approach all the things in this world from that perspective, from a basically selfish perspective, you will not see reality. Through the very act of perception, you will not perceive. And is that not the way Jesus himself described the unregenerate mind? That seeing, they will not see. And that's the condition. If you look out on the world as something to be taken and used, you're going to walk in darkness. You never will understand the meaning of life. On the other hand, if you look out on the world outside of yourself as the very means by which you can give yourself to glorify God and to do good to others, you will have light. You'll begin to learn to see what things really mean. What they mean in their depths, not just in their surfaces, that the appearance of things is meant to convey to you truth. So that when I see a table and when I see a chair, when I see the things of this world around me, I no longer see it in its surface meaning. I see it in what it's meant for, to glorify God and be good to others. And I see how I have a part in that. And I see how my priestly service begins to take everything in this material world and offer it up as a sacrifice of praise to God. And all of life becomes meaningful. You're walking in light. It's beautiful. It's glorious. It's truly good. The whole world becomes an overflow of generosity instead of a scarcity. You're going to see what things really mean. And you'll be able to glorify and enjoy God's good gift in and through the things that are made. Pardon me. It's a wonderful teaching from Jesus today. I hope you'll take it to heart and meditate on it this week. But in submission to it, even in your own homes, let's confess together now that Jesus is Lord. All together. Jesus is Lord.